Thank you to Red Eye, the Photography Network, for partnering with us to produce Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. Red Eye is a not-for-profit organization with a strong ethical focus, offering support and opportunities to help you advance your photography and your career. Find out more at redeye.org.uk. Welcome to Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Savannah Dodd, and I'm the founder of the Photography Ethics Center. Each week, I'll be talking with an accomplished photographer about the ethics of their practice. Today, in episode number 11, we'll be talking with Fatih Aboubakar about changing the narrative. Fatih Aboubakar is a documentary photographer, photojournalist, and public health worker in Nigeria. She specializes in documenting cities and towns, highlighting both the positives and negatives of each location. She focuses on health perspectives, using photography as a medium to highlight problems at the community level. She also has an interest in documenting cultures, conflicts, urban poverty, rural development, and humanitarian issues. Fatih has a special interest in creating counter-narratives for underrepresented communities. Her current work is a personal project to showcase her hometown of Borno State at the time of Boko Haram. The project, entitled Bits of Borno, has gained critical acclaim and has been published in media outlets, including The New York Times, BBC, Reuters, and others. Could we start by you just telling us a little bit about the kind of work that you do?
So I work as a photojournalist and a documentary photographer in Maiduguri in northeast Nigeria. And my work mainly focuses on the aftermath of conflicts. My hometown has been affected by the Boko Haram conflict since 2009. And I've been covering the crisis for about 5 to 6 years now.
Absolutely. I can imagine that there are quite a lot of ethical considerations that go into documenting the effects of Boko Haram. And I'm sure that you've seen quite a lot of differences as well in maybe your approach as someone who is from the local community versus people who are coming in from other places. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think there's a difference. The main reason I started actually was because I wasn't happy with the portrayal of conflicts in developing countries as opposed to how we photograph in other places. One thing that made me really angry at the time, and a lot of my work is mainly a response to portrayals of Africans in general. So one thing I noticed was that a lot of foreign photographers would fly in and then spend a couple of days, and the photos that they take usually are not quite what I would want to show, in the sense that when we photograph the other, we're always looking for this element of sadness, of tragedy. It's a conflict zone, death, dying, devastation. There's always this angle of breaking news that I was quite unhappy with. And when you look at a lot of what we see when there's conflict happening, especially in my hometown, when I was looking at a lot of the content online, it usually reduces people to numbers. 10,000 died, 400,000 are malnourished, etc. So for me, there's always that question of, okay, who survived? How many people are left behind? And how are they coping? What do they look like? So there were a lot of questions for me about how do we portray the other, and what kind of phrases do we use when we talk about the other person that is not from our community or from our country? So I was unhappy and I wanted to see the faces of these people who had survived. So that was the first thing that I noticed. And then the second thing was, like I mentioned, there's always this backdrop of tragedy. And I didn't like how we were always unhappy in coverage in mainstream media. Do we ever have weddings? Do we give birth to children? Are there naming ceremonies? Are we in school? Do we go to the market to buy groceries? What is the day-to-day in a conflict zone? So for me, a lot of that was what I wanted to focus on. Yes, we're in the midst of a conflict, but at the same time, when I went back home, a bomb blast would happen, and then the next hour there would be people outside going about their business. So for me, a lot of the issues were about portrayal, about phrasing, about kind of reducing people to numbers, and also the fact that you are coming in briefly. Is that enough for you to get what you need to portray a person? So those were a lot of the issues that I was seeing with the coverage.
Yeah, and you said something there about, you know, the phrasing that's used. And you were talking about the way that things are described in words. But I imagine there's also a type of phrasing that happens visually that we can counteract in more nuanced portrayals of conflict. Does that resonate?
Yeah, definitely the photographs are accompanied by a title, a caption. So a lot of the phrasing in words was problematic for me, but there was also, like you mentioned, the visual representation, the visual language. An example I can give is there were a lot of women and girls that were abducted by the terrorists and were turned into sex slaves. And when the military would go to villages and rescue these women and bring them back to Maiduguri, which is the capital city, they would come back traumatized and facing a lot of stigma from the community because they were coming back with babies that they had with the terrorists. So there was a lot of issues, a multi-layered problem that we were having at that time. So when photographers would come in, they would show the faces of these women. So for me, that was an issue. This is a woman already facing a lot of stigma, and then we see her face on the cover of a newspaper that is worldwide. So that is an ethical issue. That is a problem that will create more problems for the person you're photographing. So for me, I expected a different kind of photographing where you could give that person the privacy that they needed. How should you photograph this person if they were part of your family and you knew that they would face stigma after this photograph has gone viral? So I didn't like how we were showing people online or on television and talking about this girl was raped by a terrorist or this girl was a sex slave for a terrorist, knowing that there would be repercussions. So there wasn't a lot of attention on the cultural differences that we had and also on ensuring that that person had the safety that they needed even after the story is told. So those were some of what I would say were the issues visually.
Absolutely. And I guess an element of that goes back to that time that you're talking about, right? Like maybe photographers who are parachuting in aren't investing the time to know what the repercussions would be or to understand the cultural context or to know how to best exhibit care in a situation. So I guess in that way, your role as someone who is from inside the local community and you're already equipped with all that knowledge, so you know how to navigate that in an ethically sensitive way, maybe that other people who aren't investing that time would have. And I guess I'm wondering, do you think that the ethical dilemmas that maybe you are encountering or that you have encountered through a lot of your work, are they the same or different from the ethical dilemmas that someone who's an outsider to the community would be encountering in your local community?
Well, the ethical dilemmas that I face will definitely come from the fact that I already know the people that I'm photographing. A lot of the people in the community, you know, you walk around and they see you. And if you make a mistake, they know where to find you. Even if I'm able to photograph in a way that is unflattering, someone will tell me online or offline when they see me in a restaurant or something with the community. So the repercussions for me are definitely more different. But one thing that I ensured was that even when I take a photograph, I would make sure that I show that person what they would look like, where it would be going. If at all they had problems with what it would look like, they can always reach me and I can talk about ways in which we can take it off, or we can portray it in a different way, or if they do not want the image going anywhere at all. I think those are conversations that I always have on the spot before we actually leave. And a lot of times the ethical dilemmas that I face are because when I started, I didn't have the background knowledge myself. So a lot of these things you have to learn as you're photographing, as you're going online to see other people's work. And I spent a lot of times making mistakes, I would say. I would go in and photograph someone and then talk about a lot of the issues that they were having. And then when I sit with myself, I wonder, would I want my private life out like that? So a lot of the moral and ethical dilemmas I had to sit with myself. Would I like to be portrayed like this? Would I like to talk about my personal affairs like this? Would I like for everyone to know what I'm going through? So I think I asked myself a lot of questions before I post. And one thing that I know I face consistently is whether or not I should sell an image, whether or not I should publish a photo book, whether the people who I have photographed have consented to their image doing more than it should, especially me saying this is a story that we will tell to create awareness about the conflict and to also talk about resilience within a conflict. But do they know that it's also going to an exhibition abroad? And if it goes to an exhibition and it's part of a catalog, are they aware of what this means? So a lot of these questions crop up for me. And also when I do a lot of street photos, I wonder about whether or not the person in this image is aware that it has gone viral on Twitter. Some people you may not necessarily have stopped to talk to have appeared in a photograph you have taken. So even now, as I look at my archive, I wonder, is there a lawsuit coming for me? Because I think a lot about, I want to archive this. I want to create a body of work where our people say 50 years from now, this is what happened during the conflict. But has every single person in that image consented to being part of an archive? So I think these are questions and ethical dilemmas that I'm currently facing. It's even a moral dilemma for me at this point. So I wonder, would I want to be in a book? Would I want to be in someone's home in a frame from a photo they bought? You know, would I want to be in a gallery? So a lot of these questions are personal for me, at the same time being an ethical and moral dilemma.
Absolutely. And I know you've spoken elsewhere about money and financial facet to a lot of these things as well. And I guess it sort of heightens that question, you know, if you're making money off of people's faces, essentially, and what does that mean if we're not sure if they've consented, or do we have any responsibility to make a financial contribution back to the community, or what does that look like? Could you talk a little bit about how you navigate that and how you view that?
Well, the first time I sold a couple of images, I consoled myself by saying that this is part of me showing our community's resilience, showing that, you know, in the midst of a conflict, there's a different side of the story, a new narrative, a refreshing perspective. And that ties into how African photographers are sort of breaking stereotypes and creating these new stories, new bodies of work that debunk the colonial narrative and the colonial gaze. But at the same time, there's a financial benefit for you as a photographer. And they always say, you know, I listened to Don McCullen talk about being a camera with a conscience. And I always think about that a lot in ways that talk about, if I'm financially benefiting, what's in it for that person? So even now, as I teach classes, I talk about giving back. I talk about giving back in the sense that if you're financially unable to compensate for a lot of the people that you photograph, what else can you do generally within the community? So for me, I try as much as possible to ensure that some of what I get goes into projects that I really like or people who are sort of wanting to do things. Whenever I hear something, I want to contribute. So I think that helps me and helps my conscience. I want to sleep better at night knowing that some of what I get is going somewhere. And in the classes I teach, I also talk about not just the financial compensation, but even if it means like printing a photo to send it back to that person so that they can remember that moment they had with you as a photographer. I think it's important, even if it's creating a bond, they can reach out to you. Like, I remember taking photographs, and then we did a small exhibition within the camp for internally displaced persons in Maiduguri. And there was a guy who said, oh, this is my ethnic group. I really love that you took this photo. You know, it shows our attire and all of that. So, and then he called me again and he said, oh, I'm having a wedding. Can you come and photograph it? So it's enjoyable when you cannot give them anything, but you have a bond with them and they can sort of freely invite you to things and say, can you come to my home? I'm doing this. So I think that giving back, it can be emotional as well. It doesn't have to be financial. It can be in many ways that you give back to that community. The fact that they're comfortable reaching you to say, I'm having this event, can you come? So I think a lot of that takes away some of the guilt that I feel.
I think that that makes a lot of sense about what you're saying about giving back and also sort of investing in those relationships and developing those relationships. Do you ever find that when you are developing these relationships with people on a very like human level, right? We're just being humans, right? And just being friendly. But do you ever find that the closer you are, the more difficult it is to navigate ethical dilemmas or ethical considerations or things like consent?
Well, the closer you are, the more of a burden it becomes because you start to feel personally responsible for anything that happens to that person. And then you become emotionally attached to a point where you're very protective of however the content is being used. So we filmed a documentary recently. And I remember my colleague was saying, Fatih, you think you're part of this family, don't you? So it's kind of like I got so involved. And a few days ago, he called to tell me the family cat died in that family. And we were talking about how, oh, my God, you know. So it's like the more absorbed and embedded you are, the difficult it is for a lot of the ethical issues. I think you start to feel like I'm so protective, you know, and yeah, so the lines become really blurred and you start to wonder, am I representing them well? The questions become more and more and more. And then you sort of lose the consent thing. You know, you think that, oh, they'll automatically say yes because you're already embedded with them, you know. But I think it's important that you have someone reminding you, like my colleague did, that yes, you seem to be really, really having a great relationship with these people, but you have to remember that you're a professional. You have to remember a lot of the things and a lot of the reasons why we're here. We have to document this in so and so ways, and we have to always talk to them first about whether they would like it this way or they would prefer it this way. So essentially, his point, which I completely agree with, is that yes, you do have a lot of empathy for people, but you also have the professional responsibility of looking at this in ways in which there are ethics within your profession that you have to follow, regardless of how you feel about the community. The sentimentality will always be there, but you have to draw the line. So I think that was really interesting for me. And at some points, it's emotional. It's no longer ethical, you know. So you have to always remember to know that you have to act in ways that are expected globally in the profession.
You're talking there about drawing a line, right? Between, yeah, the emotional investment you have in a community, but also not going past that line and knowing where that line is between your professionalism as a photographer in the industry and, you know, your involvement in someone's life. And I guess I'm wondering if you've ever encountered a situation where you felt like you needed to be more involved than was maybe professionally expected or then was viewed as acceptable, where you felt like you had to push beyond that and get more involved?
Well, to be honest, I do that consistently and very regularly. I blur the lines, like I mentioned, and people always have to remind me, like I mentioned with my colleague, you're not a part of this family. You're really, really absorbed in everything that is going on with them. And to be honest, it's difficult not to be, because this is a place that I was born and raised in. A lot of these people that I photograph, I've known them my whole life. So when something happens to them, in all honesty, I just drop the camera and then we go to a hospital, we're on our way to a school, you know, we're going to a funeral, we're going to a naming ceremony. So for me, it's very emotional, I'm sentimental, I'm really attached. So I blur the lines a lot, and I can say that without a shadow of a doubt that my empathy has crossed many, many boundaries. And, you know, I do for people I photograph what I would do for my own family. So a lot of times, like I mentioned, people have to remind me, do the work always, you know, treat it very professionally, but it's very difficult. I'm always absorbed. And even when I travel, you know, I have WhatsApp messages from people I've finished a documentary with. They're telling me all these things that they would tell their friends. So I find it very endearing. I like the fact that they're comfortable around you to confide in you, to tell you things. You know, I have a lot of selfies with the people I photograph. So I can tell you the lines are blurred always for me.
And do you carry that sort of empathy with you when you're working on stories that are away from your hometown and that when you're photographing other communities?
Well, I remember going to another state in Nigeria in the south, and we had a driver that was driving us around. We went to so many villages and we were photographing the migrant crisis, people that were coming back from Libya. And there was also another issue we were looking at, which was people from our state in Borno State who had gone to boarding school in Edo State. And there was sadly a lot of issues with molestation, like children were having a lot of issues within the boarding school. And I remember talking with my colleague extensively about it, and we got so involved in one of the family stories, we went to another state to actually trace where the girls had escaped to. And we found the mothers, we talked to them, we photographed them, and we published the story. And one of the funders of the school followed up and sent us an email, and they were beginning to rethink whether they wanted to continue funding the school. So I think for me, I get so invested to a point where it becomes highly, highly obsessive. If I want to highlight a problem, I can travel across many states to find certain people. And also, I followed to, I think, 4 to 5 states, the places that our people had migrated to, where they were displaced to. So I have a tendency to get so absorbed to a point where I want to see where they go, where the story leads, how they end up. And I still want to communicate, and I always want to link them to other organizations that may help them. You know, so for me, it becomes really a personal issue. I want to ensure that I try my best to see that there's something done about it. At the same time, that's another emotional burden you're taking on. So I see the double-edged sword of empathy. It's a blessing and a curse in a way. You, in the end, want to take care of everybody, and that's impossible. So that's one of the main problems I have as a photographer, I would say.
And in terms of holding yourself apart, you mentioned that you found quite a lot of support from your colleagues who sort of issue reminders to hold yourself apart or to check in that way. So I'd like to know, first of all, what other things are helpful for you for checking in, but also how do you take care of yourself in that process?
Well, the work took an emotional toll on me, and I think that's something that I didn't even acknowledge or foresee. I think I started exhibiting a lot of behavior that I felt was out of character for me. I was angry a lot. I started experiencing physical symptoms. I had a lot of back pain. I had insomnia. One of my colleagues, I know I mentioned to my colleagues a lot, but they've been such a blessing. I posted a picture of myself on Facebook and he called me and he said, "Fatih, you look really dehydrated and you look really skinny." And he said, "If you drop dead today, they'll find another photographer to take a picture of your dead body." And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's so morbid. But I understood where he was coming from. He said, take care of yourself, make sure you hydrate, you know, make sure you eat. So a lot of the people around me kept reminding me, like, you look skinny, you're not eating, you're not sleeping well. I was working 6 days a week. I was always on the go. We were always on helicopters flying. I was doing exhibitions around the world. So one day I just had this back pain that I couldn't get out of bed. And that was when I knew that I needed to see a doctor first. And then I also needed to take a break. So after I saw the doctor, he gave me a lot of advice. And he even talked about relationships. You need a companion, etc. I was like, oh my God, I don't need a companion. But as I understood his point about work and life balance, not really always making it about work to a point where you're not even looking at relationships or companionship or friendships or time with your family and stuff like that. So I decided to take a 2-year break. And I realized later on that graduate school is not a good break, but at the same time, I just needed to take a break and change my environment. And as a workaholic, it's kind of hard to just go lounge on a beach. I would get restless. So I wanted to go back to school. And the first thing I did when I went to the US was to sign up for therapy. I knew that the school had access to psychosocial support for everyone. So I signed up for therapy. I think I cried a lot in that session. I cried a lot. She gave me a tissue. She gave me a book. And honestly, I credit her for teaching me boundaries. I was easily accessible. I was available to everyone but myself. So I learned how to decompress, you know, self-care. I spent a lot of time going to art galleries and sort of doing things that I liked and, you know, enjoying time not being in a conflict zone, you know. So those were things that I had to forcibly learn.
Honestly.
After almost crashing.
Yeah. No, what you said there about graduate school is not a good break. Like, can we just focus on that for a second? That is such such good advice, you know?
I don't know why I thought going back to school would be like the time off that I needed. But like I said, I'm a very restless person. I wanted my time away from home to be productive. But if you want a break, definitely try other things. But at the same time, I would say that graduate school helped me in many ways. I learned a lot. I diversified. I tried a lot of mediums. It was great to spend time away from my immediate environment. So the change of environment was great. But I don't know if taking on more work is advisable when you are on the brink. So that was my point about graduate school not always being the first option if you need a break.
Absolutely. And now you're teaching photography, is that right?
Yes.
And how are you finding that process of instruction? And in particular, I'd like to know, you know, how do you approach ethics as a photography teacher?
Well, because of a lot of the questions I had for myself and a lot of the mistakes I've made, not being aware of a lot of ethical dilemmas within the work, whether you're an insider or an outsider, and because of my own personal mistakes that I've made, I came into teaching knowing that I didn't want to teach young impressionable people photography without making them aware of not only the historical colonial gaze in many different continents, but also moving forward how to represent their own communities and how to represent other people's communities, and how to not view photography in general as this beautiful concept of, oh my God, what a wonderful portrait, looking at composition, lighting, looking at captions. I wanted them to understand that it could be a weapon for destruction as well, to badly represent people, to misrepresent, to cause people harm. So I really, really focused on that. And even a few days ago, I was reading some of the journal entries that they had made, and a lot of them were unaware of the fact that historically it's been used like that. So it's very interesting to see how people reflect on that. And I think it's very important that people are aware of that. You know, there's so much damage that has been done with a certain type of gaze. And if we do not talk about the ethical issues that they will face, we're causing more harm by unleashing young people with cameras in certain communities, really unaware of the possibilities of more harm that they could cause. So for me, that was very, very important. And I remember telling you about how this podcast is one of the links that I added to the student curriculum, because I really wanted them to hear conversations from photographers around the world, how they navigate the ethical dilemmas. And one of the students asked me a question when we talked about street photography. She said, okay, so how do we approach this issue? And I said, thank you for that question. It's an ongoing discussion, and I'll send you a podcast where everyone talks about how they struggle with a lot of these questions that you're starting to ask. I said, we're all like one step away from a lawsuit. So it's always interesting to say that we're all dealing with this. We're all trying to find the best practices to avoid the ethical problems that we may encounter. So here's a podcast, listen to it, hear different views, and see what are the best ways I can represent people.
Absolutely. Like, I love what you said there. Well, obviously, I love that you use the podcast in teaching, but I love what you said there also about, you know, how we're all learning. We're all constantly refining our approach, and we're learning through experience and through listening to others. And I think that that's something that sometimes we're all quite hesitant to admit, right? That we don't know, or that we are learning and that we are making mistakes. And I really appreciate a lot of the vulnerability you've exhibited in this interview, you know, saying I've made mistakes and I need to work on that, or that's something that I'm exploring. You know, I think having an opportunity for people to hear that from photographers like yourself is so important.
Yeah, I think opening yourself up to critique is very important, you know, listening to the critique is important, and nobody knows everything, you know, so it's a, learning is eternal. So I think that by saying to students, I don't know it all, shows you as a human being who's on a learning curve as well. So they open up more. And, you know, when they ask a question I don't know, I always say, okay, let's go to YouTube. That's my go-to. So I always insist that nobody has all of the knowledge, that even for people who are doing this professionally, there are questions they are constantly asking themselves. And I emphasize that there are a lot of conferences, there are seminars, there are so many professors researching this. It's an ongoing conversation. And always be aware of what the conversations are and where to find where these conversations are happening, so you can sit and listen and hear what you can take from it. And always have the knowledge before you go into that community. So I think opening up is key. Vulnerability is very important. Showing that you are unsure, you're nervous, you're unaware, you're learning, I think is very crucial for people coming in to see that.
And you mentioned that YouTube is a go-to resource. Do you have any favorite videos that you would tell people about in particular?
There are lots of videos. I obsessively watch a lot of different videos on YouTube. But I really like B&H and how they spend a lot of time showing the basics of everything. They invite a lot of photographers to talk about it. And National Geographic is another one that I really, really look at. And I use them a lot as references. And I like TED Talks in general. I think a lot of photographers have done amazing TED Talks that people can listen to. And there's a lot of photos that they show where they talk about their personal experiences. I look at a lot of videos, I look at technicalities, but I also look at videos where there's a lot of emotion in, and there's a lot of field work experience being talked about. And recently I found this Netflix series called Tales by Light, and it follows a lot of photographers around the world, you know, photographing different topics. And I found it really, really important for people to see beyond the camera into, like, go deep into the photographer's life and see a lot of the problems that he or she may be encountering on the field. Even personal lives, we get really into personal lives of photographers as well, because some of that determines the ethical decisions that they make. One of such that we watched recently was the Gordon Parks documentary on HBO. I really, really loved that, you know, hearing his story and how he made all of those choices behind the photographs. I think they're really, really important. So I definitely recommend that as well.
I think there's one theme that really comes out so strongly for me in so much of what you're talking about. It's really that going beyond sort of the surface level of things, right? Like you're talking about when you're wanting to see beyond the surface level of conflict into the everyday, wanting to know more about how photographs are made, going into the lives of photographers, taking stories that step extra, you know, into finding families, digging into these stories in a deeper way. Do you have anything to add to that in terms of recommendations for others, you know, who are wanting to tell stories? Or is that an important point for you?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important, because I think that a lot of people go in with the camera first. And I think that for me is a problem. Sometimes you have to spend a lot of time without the camera to understand people, to understand societies. And I'm thankful that I spent a lot of time in medical college, like understanding human behavior, you know, physiology, psychology, in generally just looking at communities without a lens, you know, without that equipment that makes people nervous when you're with it. So I'm very aware of the fact that we have to understand a society. Just like you mentioned with anthropology, you have to sit with the people, talk with them, understand where they're coming from, what they've been through. So for me, it's really, really important to know what that person is first before always coming in to say, I want to document this. So because I've spent my whole life in that place, I already know what it looks like, you know, how it feels like, what people may say or may not say. But at the same time, when you pick up a camera, you become an outsider sometimes, because then people may freeze. They feel like they can't talk to you like they were talking to you before you picked up the camera. So I want to spend as much time understanding them and how they respond to the possibility of this going online before I sort of pick up the camera. So for me, I'm really interested in human beings even without photographing them. And when I do photograph them, I'm happy knowing that I could see some parts of them, you know, before I eternalize the moment. So it has more meaning for me knowing that I know this person. And it's not just one snapshot and you're gone. It's like, I feel like I can talk about this person in depth. When you show me some of the images that I've taken, I already know like all of the buildup to this image. So it excites me that there's a lot of background work that goes into it, and that I know this community and I know these people and I spent a lot of time with them. So it's like going on a date, I would say. The person invests in you and asks you questions and knows who you are and just doesn't look at your outfit or your makeup, but looks at your soul. So for me, it's very similar. I want to look beyond your physical appearance to see what's inside.
That's such a beautiful way of describing it. I don't think I've heard anybody else describe it in that way. That's really nice. Can you tell me, what does photography ethics mean to you?
I've heard you ask this question many times. I was like, I don't know how to phrase it. But for me, approaching a story ethically means that I always say I want to photograph people the way I would like to be photographed. And it means that I want someone to take a photo of me where I would be happy with the image and how I would be represented, and always to show me what the image looks like, to show me how they portrayed me, to show me how they'll tell my story, to ask me if I like how my story is being told, to ask me if this captures the essence of my story. So it's always for me, how would you take this photograph if this was someone in your family or if this was you and it was a self-portrait? Are you happy with what this looks like? Is this something you want to present to the world? And I think that comes off more in portraiture for me, which is why I like portraiture. You're able to have a collaboration, have a conversation with the person you're photographing before a lot of this is published or goes online. So I want to photograph people the way I would like to be photographed. And I think that is, in a sentence, what the ethics is for me.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Photo Ethics Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to share new insights about photography ethics with others. So if you heard something you liked, please share this podcast with someone who would appreciate it. The links to all things mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes at www.photoethics.org. Join me next week when we hear from Annie Tritt on intentions and impact. In each episode of the podcast, we ask our guests, what does photography ethics mean to you? This is a question that everyone in the photography industry should be able to answer. That's why the Photography Ethics Center is asking you, our listeners, to commit to writing and publishing your own statement of ethics. Visit www.photoethics.org/ethics to learn more and to make the pledge committing to ethical transparency, accountability, and awareness. That's www.photoethics.org/ethics. This podcast was edited and digitally produced by Ellie Gascoigne.